Now, control of breathing. We actually already described this. Control of breathing for normal people is driven by hypercapnia. What the heck is capnia? I thought you said it was carbon dioxide. Oh, they're the same thing. So, vocabulary time. Yay! Love vocabulary. Hypercapnia. Capnia means carbon dioxide in the blood. Hypercapnia is high levels of carbon dioxide in the blood. And the reason this controls breathing is primarily through pH, through the carbonic acid. And then in the people who have what disease? COPD. If they have chronically elevated carbon dioxide levels, then hypoxemia, meaning low oxygen levels. All right, now, how many of you heard the term hypoxia before? What do you think hypoxia means? What does hypo mean?
Low.
Low or below. And what does oxia mean?
Oxygen.
So hypoxia is low oxygen. Now, what is hypoxemia? Low oxygen in the blood. So when we say hypoxia, what we're really talking about is tissue. When we say hypoxemia, we mean blood. Okay, breathing. Now, we use the word respiration to describe getting air in and out of the lungs, but what's the real word? Ventilation. Now, ventilation occurs because your chest changes shape. When you take a deep breath, or when you take a breath at all, what changes to make that happen? Okay. So, do your lungs actually do the ventilation? Or does something else do the ventilation? Something else. And what is that something else? Muscles. And the main muscle is the diaphragm. Now, what does the diaphragm look like? It looks like an umbrella, is what they say it looks like. And it sits right about here. Now, when you take a breath, what it does is it contracts and it pulls downward. At the same time, you may also have your chest expanding outward and your rib cage being pulled upwards. So what you're doing is you're expanding the chest. So watch this for a second. See that chest pushed outwards. So when you increase the size of the chest, what are you doing inside the lung? Decreasing pressure. What is the name of that law? Boyle's law. So Boyle's law says that if you increase volume, you will decrease pressure. So what you're doing is you're actually creating a partial vacuum. It's the same thing you do when you put your mouth on the end of a straw and go, you're actually creating a negative pressure, which sucks liquid into your mouth. In this case, you're changing the shape of your chest, which creates a negative pressure in your lungs, which sucks air through your trachea, bronchial tree, and into your lungs. Ooh, that was fun, wasn't it? So the muscles we talk about, superior, inferior, we have the diaphragm, we have the sternocleidomastoid. What muscle is that? Sternum, clavicle, where's your mastoid? Right here. So, want everyone to turn your head to the side just a little bit and then see this big ropey muscle right here? This is your sternocleidomastoid. It's responsible for letting you do this motion here. And it's also responsible for pulling your clavicle and thereby your scapula upwards, allowing your body to breathe a little bit easier. Now, when you're breathing right now, go ahead and just take a deep breath. Did you use your sternocleidomastoid? No, you didn't. Now, imagine for a moment that you've seen someone who's just run a marathon or maybe just a 600-meter dash. What do they look like? They're using their sternocleidomastoid because their whole chest is heaving upwards as their diaphragm is moving downwards. So we also have the scalenus muscle in the back, which are these muscles here, and those muscles will pull the scapula up. Now, sternocleidomastoid and scalene muscles together are called accessory muscles. You don't use them unless you really need to, so they're accessory use. Now, if you look at a patient in the hospital bed and you see them using those muscles, do you think that they're in trouble? That they're having more difficulty breathing? Yes. So one of the things we can do when we look at a patient is look at the type of breathing. Are they using accessory muscles? And what are the accessory muscles in this case? Sternocleidomastoid and scalenus or scalenes. Now, we also have external intercostals. This is what allows our chest to move up and out. So when you go, that's what we're talking about with there. These are also considered external muscles. Depending on the degree of use, everyone uses them a little bit when they breathe normally. So there you're talking about a matter of degree. Are they using them just a little bit, like, or are they going, that's what we're talking about. So it's a little more subtle there. You have to use your discretion, your nursing judgment. Now, expiration is passive plus. What does that mean? In order to take a deep breath in, we have to use muscle. In order to breathe out, do we have to use muscle? No. But can we? Yes. So go, breathe outwards. Okay, so you can use your abdominals and your internal intercostals to pull your thorax closed and breathe out more quickly or more forcefully. So those are, ordinarily we don't have to, but you can add some additional muscle to the expiration. All right, so let's talk about the actual physical assessment. First thing we have is history. Ask about cough. Go ahead and cough. Okay, how long have you had that cough? What kind of questions do you want to ask about cough? How long have you had it? How often do you get it? Do you bring anything up? Have you ever had any blood? Oh, that's a good one. What else? Well, this is all history. Okay, so occupational history. What else? Do you work in a coal mine? Do you work around chemical fumes? Do you smoke? Do you live with anyone who smokes? Do you have any allergies? And here's an interesting one you may not have thought of. Do you have heartburn? What's heartburn? So it's when you have acid from your stomach that comes up your esophagus and burns the esophagus. Now, one of the interesting things is, if you have heartburn, you lie down at night, you start to have some of that stuff come up your esophagus and it ends up in the back of your throat. And then guess what you do? You breathe it in. And so it can cause cough. Chest pain with breathing. Oh, sorry. Next one is shortness of breath or difficulty breathing. Then we have chest pain with breathing. Does it hurt when a person breathes? Past history of respiratory illnesses. Smoking history. Now, we usually record smoking what we call pack years. So what do you think a pack year is? Okay. What we do is we take the number of packs per day and we multiply it by the number of years they've smoked. So ordinarily, most smokers will smoke at least one pack a day. Yeah. Most smokers do not just smoke a cigarette here, a cigarette there. They're talking at least a pack a day for most smokers. So if they smoke one pack a day and they've smoked for 10 years, how many pack years do they have? That should be an easy one. 10, okay. Now, if they've smoked two packs a day, now we don't care about if they used to smoke one pack a day and now they smoke, just how much are they smoking now? If they've smoked two packs a day right now and they've smoked for 5 years, then they'll have a 10-pack year history. If they've smoked for 20 years and they smoke 3 packs a day, that would be a 60-pack year history. So what is the average age of starting smoking in this country? It's young. It's like 12, 13 years old. And one of the interesting things, women, if a girl starts smoking when they're before age 11, chances are they will never quit. There's something about women and nicotine or tobacco that if they start young, you know, it's extremely difficult for them to quit. Now, nicotine must be the most addictive substance in the whole world. Why is that? How do you know? Have you ever, what do you think people are like the first time they have cocaine? This is amazing. I feel great. What are they like the first time they ever do heroin? Oh, this is nice. What about marijuana? Dude. Yeah, man. What about smoking? It's the only drug that makes you feel worse. They have a stomach ache. They have diarrhea. They throw up. It hurts their throat. You know, they cough. And yet, they do it anyway. So, nicotine must be the most addictive substance in the world. Environmental exposures and self-care. What do people do for their breathing? Do they use a dehumidifier? Do they use a humidifier? You know, what do they do for their lung self-care? All right, developmental considerations. When a person is an itty-litty bit of baby, allergy, colds, wheezing, asthma, child-proofing of a home, in terms of breathing now, we're not talking about like light sockets. What do we mean by child-proofing a home in terms of breathing? So getting rid of carpets, or at least vacuuming very often. Carpets are nothing but dust magnets. And what lives inside of dust? Mites, little creatures that love to eat dead skin and tissue and can cause allergies. So getting rid of carpets, getting rid of pets, or at least allergenic pets, drying out surfaces so that you don't have as much mold. That's what we're talking about. Stop smoking if you're a parent with a little one. And asking about smokers. Now, for aging adults, we want to ask about dyspnea on exertion. And what do we say the trick is when asking about dyspnea on exertion? Because if you ask someone, do you get tired when you exert yourself, what do they say? Nope. But they don't exert themselves. So what they do is they self-treat their dyspnea on exertion by exerting less and less and less and less. So the trick is you have to ask, well, how much activity do they engage in? So ask about activity level and particularly changes. Do you do less than you used to? And if so, why? Well, I stopped going up the stairs. Why'd you stop going up the stairs? Well, I got a little bit of short of breath, and, you know, I may feel a little tired. I just started getting winded, so I stopped doing it. And then any chronic diseases that affect lungs.